The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WNBC.
Local Spotlight.
This is Frank Morano. I know Dominic Carter has been talking about this, but if you had any doubt as to how difficult it is to be a police officer anywhere, but especially in New York, you only need look at the case of Officer Jonathan Diller, a 31-year-old NYPD cop who was shot and killed by a career criminal during a traffic stop in Queens on Monday evening in what is being described as a senseless act of violence. And this breaks my heart. Officer Jonathan Diller is a married father of a one-year-old boy. I just think of my two-year-old and him growing up without a father, and then I imagine him being even younger and me getting even less of an opportunity to get to know him. He was shot in the stomach after police tried to remove the suspect, who's been identified as 34-year-old Guy Rivera, from the passenger seat of the car. And Diller, who had 3 years on the force, fell to the ground and screamed that he'd been hit after the suspect opened fire. Now, I was just at the Blue Lives Matter gala on Saturday evening, and I received word from Joe Imperatrice, the founder of Blue Lives Matter, and he says after the tragic loss of their NYPD brother, Jonathan Diller, they're setting up a memorial march this coming Friday, 10 a.m. in Staten Island. It's going to be very similar to the one that they held for Daniel Pantaleo a few years back. It's going to start at the Green Ridge Shopping Plaza on Arthur Kill and Richmond, and it will proceed down Richmond Avenue to where the Krispy Kreme is. I am going to try and be there as well, even though that's when I normally sleep, but I think it's important to show solidarity with the New York City Police Department and all the fallen officers at times like this. They're working on having a priest there as well for a prayer. There's going to be a flyer on this. I'll share it on my Facebook page. To be continued.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WNBC.
Local Spotlight.
Good morrow, everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight on 77 WABC. I'm superstar Frank Morano. We are still following and analyzing the death of Flacco the owl that escaped from the Central Park Zoo. I still don't think we've gotten any good answers as to how this zoo was able to escape and who was responsible for the vandalism, but we do have some answers as far as Flacco's death. A necropsy found that the owl that escaped from the zoo had a severe pigeon virus and high levels of rat poison in his system when he died. Pigeon virus, I have no idea about. I don't know how common that is on the streets of New York, but the rat poison is not at all a surprise. You know, they eat rodents and other rats that have consumed rat poison, and they're basically succumbing to the same thing that the rats are. This is a sad situation, but basically the results from this necropsy have validated widespread concerns about the hazards Flacco faced living as a free bird in Manhattan for just over a year. He would have turned 14 this month. The Wildlife Conservation Society, which operates the Central Park Zoo, put out a statement saying Flacco's severe illness and death are ultimately attributed to a combination of factors, infectious disease, toxic exposures, and traumatic injuries that underscore the hazards faced by wild birds, especially in an urban setting. The initial necropsy findings released the day after what people described as a deadly building strike suggested Flacco had sustained an acute traumatic injury to his body with signs of substantial hemorrhage under his sternum and in his back near his liver. It's just a sad situation. I realize people might think we're all a little silly for getting this worked up over an owl. But this is an owl that really came to represent the free spirit of New York City. This is an owl that was not supposed to live after escaping from the zoo, and he persevered. And he's dead because of our skyscrapers and the bird strikes into the skyscrapers, which are a big problem for buildings and for cities all over the country, but especially for birds in New York. And he's dead because of the rat problem that we have and all the rat poison that rats are consuming. It's a sad situation. There was also some evidence of bleeding behind his left eye. And you look at all these pictures of Flacco. Just looks like a lovable, wise old owl. And you hate to think of him going in the manner that he has.
Beam me up!
To be continued.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WABC.
Local Spotlight.
Thankfully, New York's redistricting process is finally over. It looks as though this process is over after what seemed like a years-long process. It was a chaotic process. Last month, the legislature vetoed the Independent Redistricting Commission's maps. That was just the latest reminder that we need serious reforms to make redistricting more transparent and more independent. Betsy Gottbaum, who a lot of you might remember as the former Parks Commissioner and the former New York City Public Advocate. These days, she's the Executive Director of Citizen Union. She had a wonderful op-ed in the Times Union newspaper, along with Laura Ladd Bierman, who's the Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of New York State. I'm going to post it on my Facebook page, and they have a number of suggestions for the future on how they can fix, meaning the state government, can fix the legislative redistricting process in the future. They say, and I agree with all of these contributions, we need to enhance the independence of the Independent Redistricting Commission. We should start by reforming how members of the commission are selected and who serves on it. This includes taking steps to minimize the influence legislative leaders have over who serves on the commission, expanding the commission so it can better reflect the state's diversity, and reducing partisanship by naming a significant number of commissioners who are not affiliated with either major party. The commission should have an odd number of members and a simple majority voting rule so members aligned with a single political party can't obstruct their work. There should also be an expedited timetable for creating these maps so the June primary won't be delayed because of the court reviews. Finally, they say the Independent Redistricting Commission must be empowered as the primary authority for redistricting. The legislature should not have the ability to veto and replace the commission's maps entirely. I love all these suggestions. I've said some of them myself, and to me, they're very common sense. Like I said, I'm going to post this whole op-ed on my Facebook page. I hope you read it. And I realize that redistricting is not a sexy talk radio topic. It's probably the reason that I'm the only person on WABC that talks about this regularly. However, it's an important one, and it's something that will really affect the future of state government, the future of potentially the whole Congress, and it's something that people need to care about. And unless you start making noise about this, Albany will do nothing. I hope you'll start making some noise.
Beam me up!
To be continued.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WABC.
Local Spotlight.
So I put on the sweatshirt that I'm wearing right now, and I was leaving the house last night. My wife has a look at me, and she says, "You know, that sweatshirt looks like it's from the 80s. My response, "Thank you." You know why? I am wearing a sweatshirt that is from the new collection of WABC throwback gear, vintage gear. And I love it because I started working at WABC about 20 years ago this month. And this was the logo that WABC used when I started working here, with the red lettering and the Statue of Liberty on it. And it was so cool to go onto the website at WABCRadioStore.com, click on vintage, and then buy one of these new vintage sweatshirts. I love this. I absolutely love this thing. So if you want to do that as well and join me in looking like you are straight out of the 80s, go to WABCRadioStore.com. And whatever you purchase, use the promo code FRANK15 and you could save some money. Hey, there's an interesting article in The Gothamist. There is a movement to stop the shtup. In a rare display of public protest, women in Brooklyn's Orthodox Jewish community are railing against a traditional practice that makes it hard for married women to get a divorce by going on a sex strike. I'm not joking. The collective action was sparked by the plight of Malki Berkowitz, an Orthodox woman in upstate New York whose husband has for years reportedly refused to grant her the religious document that would allow her to officially separate from him and remarry. That's according to organizer and influencer Adina Sash. It's been 4 years and they've been trying to help free Malki from the clutches of a very toxic relationship that has multiple levels of coercive control, according to Sash. And they approached her and they said, we need you to come out loudly and we need you to raise awareness. Now, Sash is a self-proclaimed Orthodox Jewish feminist and activist based in Brooklyn who often speaks out on her Instagram account, Flatbush Girl. And she said, this is not the first time the community has rallied around this cause with a public pressure campaign. I just hope that this movement to go on a sex strike does not spread beyond the Orthodox Jewish community, because the last thing that I need to hear from my wife when we're preparing to get a little amorous, the last thing I need to hear is, sorry, honey, I'm on strike in solidarity with Malki. We'll see.
Beam me up!
To be continued.